Well, hi, everyone. It's Khadija Yansani of bloomintoyou.com, and I'm a women's business coach, and I help women coaches get paying clients, build a full practice, and get their work out into the world. And in today's Entrepreneur Spotlight, I am speaking to the lovely Nicole Deadone, and she is a sought-after speaker, a teacher, an author who has spent her groundbreaking career redefining orgasm from a woman's point of view. She's the author of the book Slow Sex, The Art and Craft of the Female Orgasm, and is the founder and CEO of One Taste, a multi-seven-figure company that offers training in orgasm, communication, and man-woman relationships through online media and in-person coaching and courses. In 2015, her company One Taste was ranked 537 by Inc. 5000. I've had the privilege of being a student of hers in her year-long coaching program, and I also worked as the director of One Taste Los Angeles a few years back. And I'm so excited about this call today because she's going to share what it's taken to build a multi-million dollar business from the ground up and offer us some insights on how she created and designed her coaching programs. So welcome, Ms. Nicole Deadone. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it's so good to be here. It's actually really fun to hear you do the introduction. It's amazing. You're really good at it.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to start off, you know, we always start with why. Like, why? What's your big why? Like, why start a business around female orgasm?
I think that one is actually simple for me in a certain way. It's like it was given to me. And, you know, for me, it's access and access to, like, the deepest level of spirit. And I think, there's this Jacques Cousteau expression or quote where he says, you can't experience something profound and not share it with other people. And, you know, for me, it's the thing that woke me up. And it was awake in me, and so it essentially started the company. It was like there was no way I could live in peace and not share it.
So you surrendered and said yes.
I did, yeah. I kicked and screamed and surrendered. I did it all.
Well, when you set out, did you imagine that it would become an international company?
You know, it's funny. It's like I don't want to sound crazy, but so I got the idea for the company. I was getting a facial one time, and I heard now's the time to open the company. You know, and then I had this picture, and it was literally like everything just laid itself out in my mind. And after the facial, I had to run to this park and just write down everything I had seen. And I had actually seen like we actually aren't even half of what I saw. I just saw it going totally global, and I really did see yoga, meditation, and orgasm as equal practices, and I just saw it just spread like wildfire, and then I had to dial it all the way back, and, you know, I went home and told my housemates, and they were like, you're crazy, you know, but once you know something, you know it, you have to live by what you know.
I just had this vision of you in the park, you know, after the facial, and like, do you remember the sensations in your body at that time as you were getting this download?
Yeah, it's funny. I can't believe I'm going to give you this description, but when I was young, I used to always wash my mom's car, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I would forget, and I would wash the car first and then vacuum after. And, like, I would plug in the vacuum, and I would kind of get, like, a little electrocuted. And that's how it felt. It felt like there was more energy rushing through my body than I could possibly withstand. Like, I couldn't write fast enough, but at the same time, there was an urgency to write.
So when your flatmates told you that you were crazy, why didn't you second guess yourself?
I did, and I do, and then it's like you know, people often say to me like, oh, you know, would you do it again? And I don't, in a certain way, I don't even think I did it. It doesn't matter. I think when that thing wakes up in you, it doesn't matter if you doubt yourself. It doesn't matter if you quit. It doesn't matter what you do. It's going. And so, you know, I definitely doubted myself. And then the next thing I knew, my body was running downstairs to the computer and looking on Craigslist to find the building. You know, it's like it just keeps going in a certain way. And I think in a sense that's the practice, is it keeps going. And for me to do my absolute best to go with it, when I do, there's a freedom. And when I don't, there's a torment. You know, and so it's like, okay, that's the whole practice, is to learn how to go with it.
Hmm. I love how you say there's a freedom or a torment. And it's so true. It's like there comes a point, like either you're going to be tormented if you don't.
Uh-huh.
And it's like that Anais Nin, I always forget the quote, even though I adore it so much, about the bud, like it came a time when it was more painful to stay closed than it was to open, and I'm not saying it exactly as it was, but.
Right, yeah.
Did you actually, I love that you went to Craigslist, did you actually find a building?
Well, that was what was even crazier. See, the whole thing was just, it was just pre-written, because about the fourth building I found, I was like, this is it. And then I ran upstairs, and I had the picture of what the building had to look like. And and my housemates were like, Nicole, that building is purple. And I was like, it doesn't matter. I know it's the building. And we went and we drove by it. Nobody was there. And then we went in the next day, and when we walked in, I just walked into the vestibule area, and I was like, this is it. I know it. And then the guy was like, well, do you want to see the rest of the building? I said, oh, okay. And so then we went in, and then we went upstairs, and he had a Buddhist altar. And, you know, my background is in Buddhism. And I just knew it was like the entire space, just it felt like it already. So, yeah.
Well, what I'm hearing is that, like, you were led, and you just kept following the intuition. And how much of that would you say you attribute to the practice itself of orgasmic meditation?
I think the first thing I want to say is 100%, in that, because I owned a business before this, and the business that I owned before was run 100% on self-will. It was like, I drove that thing, and it was awesome. It was an awesome business, but it was like the difference between petroleum and solar. Like, it was just like black with smog, the stuff that was coming off of it. And this is just like, you know, the practice really taught me to just trust that deeper thing. And even when it doesn't make sense, because this business has not made sense, and we have consultants come in all the time, because I just didn't know what I was doing. I don't understand any of this. And so we have consultants come in, and they're like, how are you making it? we're really, really, really making it. And so, like, our last consultant was so funny. He's like, you have to write a book on how you created a business like this, because it's like, it's a seamless business in a certain way, but it's seamless only because I just keep following it. It doesn't make business school sense, not, I think, a single decision that we've ever made.
So if you were to write a book, like, what would be the main tenets as to how you have created the success you've created?
Well, it's funny. I actually have Joanna, the president of our company, writing the book right now. And the book's going to be called Driven by Desire. So that would be my number one tenet, is to follow desire. And, you know, we've done totally insane things. Like, you know, we were having a really rough sales month, and we couldn't even make rent. And all of us were miserable. We were just a miserable, miserable group of people. And I just shut the business down for like a month. And I was like, for 1 month, we are just going to hang out. We're going to scrap together rent just so that we can pay the rent. And we're going to go back to what's important. We're going to go back to the practice. We're going to go back to our friendship. And then like 2 years ago, we were also miserable. It was another miserable time. And I was like, okay, for a month, we're only doing what we want. Period. Like, we were so big, we couldn't shut the whole company down, but like, we did all of our business from the beach. Like, it was just like, there's no way that, because if I'm miserable, then, and this, you know, the actual business itself is about really finding a the conditions to be happy inside of. If I'm miserable, then that's what I'm transmitting, and there's an incongruency.
There's so many pearls there, especially, you know, just from your, when you say about your first business and it being, you know, self-will all the way to moving into the paradigm of, like, I'm driven by desire. And especially being in the online space, a lot of the people that I work with are coaches, and there's a way that you can will yourself to get clients versus what it looks like to be moving from desire. And I'm curious, like, do you remember your first coaching clients and building your coaching business? Were you already rooted in desire then?
My very first coaching clients, I was still working with my teacher back then. It was even before One Taste. It's funny. It's like what I was rooted in at that time was I had worked with my teacher for many, many years at that point, or like 4 years, I think, at that point. And I was just so full. I was just so fat with gratitude. And so those first clients sure got a bang for their buck, because I was like a ripe plum, and I just poured this love and gratitude on them. And I think, you know, I think that was such a beautiful place to begin. In fact, I do very, very little coaching at this point. I do like very specific clients, and some have been grandfathered in, but because I'm running the company. But the thing is I only do it when I'm full. I won't coach when I'm not full. I won't let that kind of really, really deep relating come from any kind of scarcity. It just has to come from abundance. And I'll cancel an appointment if I'm not full. And the clients who've worked with me have worked with me long enough to know that it's to their benefit to wait until I'm full, to have my absolute undivided attention. Because then if I'm turned on, they're turned on. And then I actually really care about them getting their results.
I so love that. If you get nothing from all the pearls that she's mentioned, only coach when you're full.
Yeah.
And so how does that connect to getting paid for coaching? Because so many coaches struggle with feeling worthy of charging. And when I hear you say that you were so grateful and you're pouring your love on clients, was it easy for you to accept money for your services then?
So here's the part no one likes that I say. And I think it's where you have to find a why in your coaching, where you have to like, you know, if you believe in God, then you have to find your connection to God. Whatever you believe in, you have to find that thing, because in my estimation, this is me, it cannot be for the money. Like, you know, and this is the part, like, I went $1,700,000 in debt with this company. Like 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago, that's where we were before we hit, you know, now we're like, oh, but it was such a labor of love. It was such a labor of love. And I think that's the long game way of doing it, because now the people who are with me are just, they're just ride or die. You know, they're just, they stay in there because they know that underlying why. You know, of why I'm here. And I think that's the hardest piece to work through but I think that's the practice. And I think if you can do your coaching as your personal practice, it radically shifts it. So like my personal practice is, wow, to really like, it's every, and everyone has crazy ideas on money, crazy, crazy ideas. And like people are like, oh, you do a spiritual practice, you shouldn't charge. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm not a renunciate. And then people say like, oh, you should charge more because you can, and you can. And it's like, you have to find your own personal right number for you, for your soul, what will feel good, like just the perfect amount, not too much, not too little. And then once you hit that, then it's so easy to ask for it.
Mm-hmm. How would you say that, you've been able to uncover that amount for yourself, like inside of yourself?
I think, I meditated on it a lot, and I think there's like just a resonant number. Mm-hmm. I think we all know that feeling mm-hmm. when something goes ding, you know, like, yeah. And there's that place where, you know, there's that place where you know you're not asking for enough. And here's the thing. When you underextend, the world feels that. Mm-hmm. And it's actually much, I have a fairly high fee for my coaching, but that's just the right number at this point. And when it hit that number, all of a sudden that it blew up. But when I charged less, you know, people could feel like, oh, wait a minute, if she's not feeling confident in herself, how am I going to feel confident in her? So we all can feel when somebody's living in their resonant space. Everyone can feel it. That person just shines. There's a light within them. And so you just know all they're doing is being honest with themselves. And, you know, your resonant number right now might be $20 and your resonant number might be, you know, $2,000 an hour. You know, Tony Robbins has one client who it's $1 million, right? And he only sees him like twice a year. And that's just the resonant number for him. And you feel like it feels honest. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's just to find that for you. And whatever that is, it'll begin to build itself. Honesty always builds.
I love that. So I know that you have a coaching program. I was in your coaching program.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it important for you to start a coaching program?
I think, you know, it's funny. It's the overflow. I've studied this for 20 years. I have so much information. Even at this point, I can still only disseminate 10% of what I know. You know, it's just like, and I think it was that place of being so full. I wanted some way to, in my heart of hearts, there's something that just, I can't say thank you to orgasm enough. And so it's almost like wanting, the only way I know to do it is to give other people who want access. And so it looked like a way to do that.
So for those who it might be their first time hearing about orgasm and orgasmic meditation, what would you say that orgasm has to do with business and you growing your business?
Well, I think my definition of orgasm is like what the orgasm impulse is at the fundamental level is like the animation of the creative or evolutionary force inside of you. When you know what orgasm fundamentally does is it accelerates whatever there is. Now, that's the thing you have to remember. Whatever is inside of you, it accelerates. So if you have some, you know, grief, it's going to accelerate that moving through. But what it gives you the opportunity to do is just accelerate your awakening. And so the more you tap into it, and then the more you tap into it in a meditative way and use this like accelerated force to train your attention so that your attention can stay connected no matter what the speed or intensity of whatever you're experiencing is, then it radically shifts who you are in every domain. But like as a business person, you know, I'm a woman and like I want to be liked. I don't want to argue. I don't like negotiating. There's a whole set of things that are not my favorite things to do.
Really?
For sure. For sure, for sure. But sensation that comes with all of those. Well, okay, I can deal with it at the sensation level because I have my practice. So, you know, most of us when we black out, meaning, you know, like when you check out on something or when you procrastinate, whatever it is, it's some sensation you're not willing to face. So if you have a practice that trains you how to face every sensation, you're golden.
Well, given what you've... You know, like when I hear you say, like, yes, I'm a woman and I like to be liked and having had to deal with people pleasing and you are the CEO of this company, like what would you say is the hardest part?
I think it's two things. I think it's definitely it's like as a woman, the hardest part probably is I so deeply, 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 my nature is to be receptive and to accommodate. And I just want to please people, you know, like that's just like at the root of my nature. And I think being a woman CEO, that doesn't work in some ways, you know, it's like, so I think I've taken like, you know, I get a lot of emails every day, a lot of them. And I get a lot of suggestions, both personal and business-wise, about how I and it could be different. And, you know, I had a male business partner for a while, and he didn't get those. And so there's a way. And so, like, for years, I would just answer each one with great care, and I didn't want, you know what I mean? I wanted everyone to feel received. And all of a sudden, there came a point. It wasn't that long ago either, like really not that long ago, where I just was like, today is the day when I'm going to stop apologizing. And when I'm going to stop accommodating, when I definitely want everyone to feel heard, and by the same token, you know, I got it.
Today is the day.
Today is the day.
A decision, a choice. You jump the broom.
Yeah. It's still sifting through in my system, like. But I, you know, it's like one of the things that I discovered that's really, really hard in business is that being receptive in business often translates to weakness. Mm. And it's just a different game. And so it's a matter of like speaking the native tongue of any arena that I enter into. It's not that I'm being indifferent or cold. It's like, no, that just isn't what we do here. Oh, okay, I get it. But it took me, I've had the company for 13 years. It took me 12 and a half years to really, really begin to get this.
Yeah. So when you get these emails with people's suggestions, maybe criticism, how do you deal with that? Or I'd even go so far as to say, you know, haters, people that hate on you or on one taste, how do you respond or deal with that?
I think, you know, the first thing I do, like the very first thing I do, I don't know if it's going to sound crazy, but the first thing I do is I forgive them, like in my heart. And it took me a long time to learn also that you can do it immediately. Like the forgiveness doesn't have to take years. And so, and what I mean by that is not that there's even anything to forgive them for, but there is sometimes this really intense energy that comes my way. And if I don't start with just an energy of not drinking the poison, but actually hearing the suggestion, then I end up just drowning in poison. And so that's where I start. Like, okay, whatever the tone is, that probably is just an unintentional off-gassing. What is the suggestion or what is the feeling? And then, so I listen to all complaints as suggestions, and I take in all complaints as real, true, valid, and important. And then I let them change me as necessary. You know, like, you know, somebody was yelling at me, oh, you don't acknowledge people enough. And so, like, I sat with it and sat with it and sat with it. And then we came up with, like, an acknowledgement program online for people. And it was like, oh, that was awesome. You know, so, I try to take in everything that comes into my world. I happen to believe in God. So I take in everything in my world as a suggestion from God to look at. It doesn't mean I have to, you know, change who I am or try to please or appease anybody. I always check in with that deeper self about what I want to do with it, but that's, and then I let it sift through. What, you know, what doesn't fit, I just let that sift through.
That's so powerful, because a lot of the women that I work with, and I've had it myself, like as they're becoming more visible with their work, there's fear about what other people are going to say, or if they do say something, it impacts them so heavily. And just to see how you take it all in and look for the pearls and like leave what you don't need.
Yeah.
Potent. And so if you had one piece of advice to give to women coaches and women business owners about running a successful company, what would it be?
Well, I think it would be know your why, and because it's gonna, you're gonna have to come back to it. There's this beautiful notion, you know, Amelia Earhart. This is one of my favorite things. So they used to put her in this round enclosure, and it didn't have any windows, and they would spin her in all directions, and she would have to guess if she was going north, south, or east or west, so that if she were flying, she would be able to feel the direction as opposed to having to rely on her instruments, right, in case they went out. And I feel like you fly in the dark a lot as a business person, definitely as a businesswoman. And so to develop that why, and you know, that why, I never lose that. And then that's my inner compass. And so sometimes I'll have no idea, zero, no idea what to do. There is no good option. And then I take whatever I see as potential options and weigh them against that feeling in my gut of why I'm here. And I just try to choose the better one. And I can say that's the only reason I've been able to stay in it, is that I'm just, that first part was relentless in me. I am so clear on that. Everything else, I don't have any idea.
And I so am appreciating how you don't have any idea. Like, it's so beautiful to hear that navigating this unknown, but so, like, it feels so powerful. Like, there, I just hear the trust in your voice, and, like, I have no idea. Not that there isn't fear or, you know, mean emails or suggestions, but, like, yeah, this, the way that you're moving through it is super inspiring.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Well, in the practice of OM, we name sensations, and I just want to name that there's warmth and buzzing in my face, and there's heat in my chest, and just warmth and expansion there, and just it feels so good to sit with you.
Yeah,
and,
that's good.
Sensational. It feels sensational. Sensational in both. You know, sensation. We talk a lot about sensation in orgasmic meditation, but yeah, it feels incredibly sensational. So, can I end with an inside out?
Sure.
Right now, I'm feeling.
Me? You want me to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right now I'm feeling heightened. It's a heightened sensation, definitely in my chest and in my heart, and you know, buzzing on my skin. That I would translate, if I had to translate it to, I would translate it to gratitude.
Well, it was such a pleasure to speak with you today, Ms. Nicole. And if you'd like to find out more about Nicole Deadone and her work, you can go to her website at onetaste.us, and that's one, O-N-E, taste, T-A-S-T-E, dot us. And you can learn more about her and the practice of orgasmic meditation and all the courses that she offers. And if you'd like to learn more about my work and growing your coaching practice, you can check out bloomintoyou.com. That's BLOOMINTOYOU.com. And stay tuned for our next Entrepreneur Spotlight. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Thank you, Nicole. That was so awesome.